I was talking with my buddy Leif the other day. Mm-hmm. And he's a gentleman that's been steeped in devotional Brahmanic culture for many decades. He knows how to worship shit, you know? Huh. I mean, like, formally. Hindu, Chandi, all kinds of exotic and magical incantations that take hours to perform, often with rice and fires and ghee.
He likes the celebration aspect.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he's studied it. He's pursued it. He's immersed himself in it, you know.
Is this Leif?
Leif. Yeah, same guy, different pronunciation. Yeah, like Leif Erikson. He's a Viking. He's a Viking.
Yeah.
So he's a Hindu Viking. And, I said, well, you know, where do you go with this, right? I mean, do you do all these devotional, does one do all these devotional things for a destination? You know, when you start responding to the suffering that's showing up in your life, whenever you start responding, some never do, right? I mean, you can medicate yourself to the grave.
Okay.
And I envy everyone that's able to do that. It just failed me. But so at some point you start, right, some kind of road less traveled journey. And now we have, by now, here in 2015, we have multiple decades of Buddhist and Hindu and yogic, right, indoctrination and institutionalization. Decades and decades of it in the West, right? Yeah. That doesn't mean you can find a Chandi chanting devotional temple on every corner like you can a yoga studio, but give it time. Or let's say that you have, you know, gone to an ashram in Virginia or an ashram in India. Hi.
Hi.
Or you've done meditation, you've taken vows, you've already adjusted your diet 4 or 5 times, you know. Finally, you've arrived at a 95% live food vegan, right? Your shoes are plastic, and you've nailed this. You've done the work. You know, you got a brown jacket from Thich Nhat Hanh. You're recognized in your church or your temple, right? You've amassed all kinds of accoutrements of recovery and emotional maturity and exotic spiritual experiences. You might even be recognized in your community or nationally or maybe even internationally, right, as a speaker on the topic of enlightenment, God knows what. People come hang out with you on retreats, correspond with you, right? They take your course. They emulate the best of you because, you know, you're chilling with Brahman. Thanks.
Chilling with Cheetos.
Chilling with Cheetos.
Right.
Yeah.
It's enough about me.
Enough about you. That's your biography. Well, thank you very much. Great to be back. I'm here all week. Special on the corned beef.
You didn't put in a plug for your devoted followers here.
The way that we've been permitted to hang out with each other, right? And I truly mean permitted, encouraged and permitted to hang out with each other, has been dictated by, right, these various institutional archetypal forces. Like in 12-step, you are permitted to hang out in a certain way. If you start straying from that zone of permission, you're either going to be asked to conform or, right, launch. Same is true of the Buddhist temple or the yoga studio or hanging out with, you know, whoever the awakened master is du jour. In the office place, right, in the workplace, we are permitted to, right, relate to each other within a, right, certain kind of agreement, if not imposition. And you know what the consequences are if in the workplace or the mosque or the church or the yoga studio or out on the street, if you can't stay within the boundaries of what's permitted, you might either have a problem, or if you're lucky, you could turn that into becoming a multi-millionaire, right?
Chances are not.
Chances, yeah. Most have a problem. Yeah. I think there are more people incarcerated for petty crime than there are Hollywood moguls, right? Yeah.
For politicians.
Right. So let's say there is some thing, evocative crescendo of human experience called liberation or liberace. Doesn't really matter. I think they're kind of interchangeable. You know, having Matt Damon as your driver is just as good as, you know, rubbing shoulders with Byron Katie, I think. And still very much so for folks that are responding to, let's say, their own suffering or apprehension, right, behavioral challenges that have sought healing and health and call it constitutional behavioral models. Right? That's not really enough. It's not really enough just to participate in someone else's idea of how it looks like you should behave so that, you know, you're a good Buddhist, a card-carrying Hindu, right? That it's okay for you to hang out in Neem Karoli Baba circles because we hang out in a certain way. We worship Neem Karoli Baba. We tell stories. We eat food. We sing bhajans. And we all voluntarily participate in the worship of the deceased guru and miraculous stories about the deceased guru. And if anyone raises their hand and says, what the fuck, in the middle of that circle, it's like, well, put your plate down and get out. It really is, because I've gone to a lot of these places and done that, and invariably, I'm testing it. I'm testing it. You know, you put your plate down and get the fuck out. So sorry. Thank you so much. Yeah, you know, I've got that one tattooed. Yeah. And we're not taught or encouraged to establish the vocabulary in the broader sense, a vocabulary of verbal communication, a vocabulary of hanging out, a vocabulary of responding to the fact of ascension or the fact of liberation and how it lands in your experience, and whether that all of a sudden turns you into a solo act, right? Or what does it look like if you feel yourself, feel windows opening into, let's say, the presence of your own inexplicable nature? How do we hang out that way? We don't really know how to. You know, because like in the West, the way to hang out is maybe at church or in the, you know, the Joel Osteen audience, laughing and clapping on cue. I mean, you know, you become a member of a TV audience and you laugh and clap on cue. Yeah, the cards go up and they tell you when to laugh and when to clap, mm-hmm. Right? For the sake of the TV experience. Who was the gentleman looking for?
Meeting. A meeting.
Yeah, not tonight.
Not tonight.
Oh.
Not here, Friday, not tonight.
Or
Friday.
Maybe.
Or no, it's set Wednesday and Saturday.
Too many goodies.
Well, that's, you know, that's kind of a nice, poignant example, right? Someone comes in search of an NA meeting to save their life, right? I mean, we're not talking about just to casually hang out.
Should I go get them?
No, but thanks.
This is like the anti-NA group.
Yeah.
By all means, don't go fetch.
But what's interesting is that we're all awake and we're all, you could say, crushed in a very egalitarian way. Right, regardless of racial or gender or any other kind of artificial demarcation, we're all maggot food, and we're all, you know, working toward the same kind of actualization. And yet, you know, if you're heading for an NA meeting, you don't sit here, right? If you sit here, you don't necessarily go, you know, and do something someplace else. It's curious how you find, right, what interests you and what speaks to you as a way of exercising your life, going in search of various kinds of nourishment, right, recovery and fellowship,
yeah.
Right?
Well, it seems like most groups that you go with or join, they have a very, you know, pretty narrow range of acceptable behaviors and responses.
That's right.
And it's, I think usually it's constrained. I mean, you know, it would be nice to be able to be more open.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And that's an adventure.
You can always try it, see what happens. Jeff's tried it. He's gotten kicked out of many places.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's an adventure if you go in with the idea of not really pulling too much stock in conformity.
Yes.
I think you have to be wired for nonconformity, sort of. Like, well, Jeff's better than me, per se. I'm wired for conformity. I suck at not going with the flow.
Usually, if you're, like, speaking from my experience, if I'm not conforming, I usually just sort of want.
Right, right.
Yeah.
People are silent.
Jeff gets drop kicked, front feet first out the door.
Yeah, escorted bodily.
He's a troll. What do they call that on the internet?
Badger?
Troller or
troll?
Troll. Yeah.
If you don't become a celebrated, lucrative teacher, then
you don't have to.
I'm just looking at, you know, models of what it's like to enter into a deep field, like the Hubble, a deep field of, call it exaltation, call it transcendent dignity, call it, you know, a profound maturation of the species, coming into contact with a palpable contact with the transhuman experience. And does that mean that we stop talking, stop socializing, stop participating in the gift of fellowship and recovery? You know, it's bizarre, right? Because when you go to celebrity teachers, how are you allowed to interface with them? Usually, again, typically through different kinds of gates, right?
Well, it's sort of crowd control, isn't it? It's like the only way to get to that, you know, to have such a multitude is to really be pretty controlled in the way that they can respond, you know.
Right. So they become institutionalized. They institutionalize themselves. And before you know it, there's yellow tape and a security force.
Yeah.
Well, what would you do? Like, hypothetically, what would you do if, you know, gosh, goodness, you know, we've got like 20 people come in here regularly. Wait a minute. Oh, shit. Now we got like 30 and we're not fitting.
Like,
what would you do?
What, you had a dream like that?
Don't you remember I told you that dream? Right?
Well, I probably blocked it.
And like people started like, you know, wanting more of your time and like hounding you on the, like it's possible.
You told me I wanted Israel all for myself or something. Because I didn't want them all coming in. Jerusalem or something.
No, no.
Like perhaps these teachers are just responding to.
I haven't given it any thought. Really? Yeah.
I don't know. I think sometimes people may put their shingle out and, you know, they start small and clearly something's moving that people are coming and it makes sense to have some organization if you've got bigger groups of people coming.
Of course, yeah.
And they may not even have initially intended to do anything with it and it just flows.
No, Ramana Maharshi, you know, just had to go to the mountain. He would have been happy to die there except that they, you know, cleaned him up and took all the bugs off his body, apparently. He would have been happy to perish as the self, you know, at 16 years old or however, whatever it was.
Yeah, in the interview I heard that they're told, he's like, people used to just come over to my house and I could meet with them. He's like, yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Hmm. I wonder why not.
I remember Byron and Katie talking about in the early days having like so many people in her house, they'd be sleeping in the living room and stuff. And she was trying to get from the bedroom to the bathroom and she couldn't
crawling over bodies. Yeah.
And she was like, well, you know, then I just realized, well, if I just, you know, pee right here, oh, well, she couldn't get through to the bathroom.
Mm.
This Byron Katie's pee. Mm.
I got some on the internet.
Never tried this.
I got some on eBay. Yeah. I use it whenever I'm really depressed. This perks me right up.
So that would be like a misappropriation of value projected out there somewhere on some fabricated hero that is collectively, you know, kowtowed to. Like,
yes.
Yes, more, yes, more, yes, more.
Well, see, that's it's funny because it's not just the, you know, the teacher that institutionalizes themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's a response to the way that we worship shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Even when the teacher tells you, like, no, not me, don't make me look to yourself, you're still like, no, I'd rather have you. Like, this.
Yeah. Right?
This is better.
Yeah. So we have that tendency. I mean, as infants, we imprint, right? Right? We're looking for someone, anyone, even if it turns out to be our own parents, God forbid, that we, you know, imprint upon so that we can figure out how to resolve the cacophony of our own weird experience. And we create organically, right, with no voluntary intent to do so, pattern recognition and association, much of which is pre-verbal for the early years of our life, as we figure out how to, you know, wander in and around the primates that are giving us food and a place to sleep.
Well, if I put you above me and I'm so sure that you have something I don't have and make you very special,
yeah,
then I don't have to face the music. I can just come,
yes,
you know, worship at your feet.
Yes.
That, I don't have, yeah, to own that it's really my own seeing. It's going to be my own realization if,
yep,
I realize anything. I can put it all on you.
Yep.
If I just follow in your footsteps, then, all right, I'm doing
this. This is pain management, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
That's a form of pain management. Yeah. Projection and transference, right? Classic qualities of sublimating our own sorrow or grief or angst or confusion. And then, whoop. Yeah. So this is really a new adventure. Let's say here we are in the West, and curiously, we're interested in a certain kind of topic, and that topic is, what the fuck is this? Right? And that dovetails somewhat neatly to, you know, Buddhist teaching and yogic teaching and, right, Vedanta and Advaita, Dzogchen, Kashmiri Shaivism, Gnostic Christianity, Kabbalism, right? Go on and on. Western occultism. It dovetails really nicely with all of these beautiful bodies of work and decades, if not millennia, of celebrated teachers, right? Through lineage after lineage after lineage. So we have a huge, really a huge playroom to fuck around in. I mean, there's more books than we could read, commit ourselves to in a lifetime, right? So, you know, next week I'm going to go Baha'i. And then, whoop, you know, I'm going to go Southern Baptist. Then I'm going to go, right? And I'm going to just keep trying to feed the dog, right? With whatever kind of evangelical juice I can get my hands on. And that'd be cool, too. I mean, it would be kind of fun, really, to drift aimlessly from, right, group to group and body to body and devotion to devotion. I mean, it might be really confusing, but in a way it could be kind of thrilling, you know, tremendously novel.
A lot of people do that over the course of their,
yeah,
you know, travels.
Yep, that's right.
Drift.
I mean, if you practice Course in Miracles, you know, out in rural... rural Colorado, you know, or rural Arizona. It's a lot different than doing it in Doylestown.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's very different.
I asked a Catholic nun one time if she'd ever heard of the Course in Miracles. She looked at me.
She had no clue, right?
Yeah. Oh my God, she had no clue.
Really? She might not have even heard of Mormonism.
Oh my God, it was a silly question.
Yeah. Oh.
But the Mormons have heard of her because apparently you're the most knowledgeable about other religions.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Like Scientology wants to know who its enemies are. That's right. Suppressives. You know, when you go to a meditation kind of discipline, right, the encouragement there is a kind of isolation. Right? Meditation is taught and honored, right, as a somewhat of an isolation. You can do it with 140 people, depending on the size of the hall, but
isolation.
Yeah, that's right. But you're isolating and participating in some kind of, call it, you know, sensory deprivation, mm-hmm, which is why the word retreat, right? A sensory deprivation, minimal distraction. You're not texting, you know, on the cell, no computer, you're not socializing, right? You are kind of with yourself within a structure of, on these, you know, Vipassana retreats, a long day routine of sitting and walking meditation and a work period and meals. And then in the evening before you go to bed, you get to do a bunch of monotone chanting. Right? You know, and then you're up at 5 a.m. to hit the cushion once again for 3 months.
That's a rough week.
That's a rough week. That's a little easier than real life.
Well, once you settle down, yeah.
Yeah, once you settle down.
Once you settle down.
The pain isn't too bad.
Yeah, and if your real life is not so demanding on your psyche, you can really get in the groove.
It's the best vacation I usually take. I've got 7-day silent retreats. They're the best.
Right.
3 good meals, not too much work.
Right.
Easy.
So I like to question the models that we have kind of taken for granted. Because all the models of the journey and the adventure of your wakefulness, the recognition of your own transcendent nature, you know, are kind of tired of the permission sets that we've been given. What does it look like and what does it feel like to apply yourself, not in an effortful way, not in a caloric way, but really, the sheer thrill of contemplating your present experience in a truly egalitarian manner without having to follow a pattern.
Yeah. You don't find that just anywhere.
And we're only beginning maybe to even learn as a species how to hang out in, you know, that refreshment, that atmosphere. Yeah.
The invitation in the circle not to show up with the latest and greatest of what I've done and who I am is really kind of refreshing. And it's not like some of us doesn't show up.
Well, sure.
You know, we know kind of some things that are going on in each other's lives and that type of stuff, but just not to have that as the focal point. Your average social gathering is just boring as dog shit. It's like, isn't there anything more here? And then if it's not just social gatherings like that, then it's usually some kind of structure, like you were saying, you know.
Yeah.
Churches or 12-step programs,
right,
or, you know, other ways to gather with people. There's not many.
Yeah.
To gather to just kind of take another look at what is this?
Yes.
At least in the old days, they used to sing and dance and do something. Now you have to have just boring conversation at most parties.
Ooh. Ooh. Worship, no, you can worship bees.
There has to be like food involved. There has to be a dinner.
There has to be food, yeah.
And then there's usually, you know, some movie or something, you know, because just to sit there and well, the problem is you do sit there and talk. And when you do sit there and talk, you talk about stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like,
this doesn't translate. In those settings, this does not translate. Because it doesn't resonate with most people.
The closest I could come to, you know, okay, that's pretty good whenever, but, you know, we're going to do something with these friends, and, like, what are we going to do? And I'm like, if we could just like in college days, go light up a J and just hang out. You
Why didn't you call?
Yeah, really.
Would have been over.
Let's see.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what I remember is the highlight, one of the highlights from college. Just hanging out like that.
Mm.
You know, that old thing of lighten the
peace pipe.
Dry cleaning bag, you know, open the lock, we'll do that. Watching it drip into the water. And it sounds like supersonic.
We can do it again. Let's. Why don't we go over your house
and
we'll bring various inebriatives and we'll light up some dry cleaning bags.
Drop the dry cleaning chemicals into the marijuana.
Oh, God.
But the point is, that's the only time I remember absolutely. That's the closest to this that I ever got.
Hmm.
You know, just in those days. Hmm. And that was almost gone forever, except for a few minor exceptions.
We're invited to go into a certain kind of a rabbit hole, down a rabbit hole, where rather than filling the space with anecdotal reference, you fill the space, or you occupy yourself absolutely relaxed or free from the, you could say, the urgency for anecdotal reference. Mm. And not do that under the auspices of a meditation instruction where you're supposed to sit in isolation on a cushion facing forward. You know, and then maybe after lunch you can talk about your so-called meditation experiences with each other. You know, but it is a challenge to hang out presently, conversantly, feeling what it is that you feel, whether sentimentally or otherwise, and simply enjoy yourself. And not feel that, you know, that kind of pressure, socially or otherwise, to resort to, right, anecdotal presentation. And again, do this eyes open, right, to together, if whatever together might suggest. You're peering, as you are always, peering into the intimacy or the nature of your own experience. But you're not befuddling yourself with, you know, a rapid-fire associative mind. Right? And that's a different way of occupying your present experience in the company of others and feel what that feels like. Explore it. You know, what comes to mind, not necessarily as a story, but as a, you could say, a present reflection or a present question, right? And one might discover that there is a deep, lurking nourishment that you're made of, which is a different kind of discovery than always going extrovertedly in pursuit of nourishment through circumstances and events or various forms of sensual, right, indulgence. And that's part of the neurosis of the culture, is that we go in hot pursuit of superficial demonstrations of sensual nourishment, sentimental, right, evocative nourishment, without seeing or discovering that, oh my God, my very being is effusively dripping with that very nourishment as its own nature, then it changes the habit that we have for trying to pursue nourishment in time or in space or through commitments or through appointments or through encounters other than your own presence.
I think there's I don't know what to call it, a learning or an unlearning of recognizing and the spontaneity and the stillness, what have you, as opposed to just sort of letting the mind track and automatically respond.
There's definitely a, well, we could even call it a physiological shift from mind activized with association, storytelling, right? As contrasted with, let's call it mind or attentivity, feeling its own vibratory nature. What anyone's after, it's not easy to speak for, how many billion are there of us?
Seven.
Yeah. Give or take, right? No, it's not easy to speak on behalf of 7 billion, few of whom that I've had the privilege to meet. But just to be outrageous, you could say what the primate's after, what the species is after, what the actualization is about, is the revelation of one's own being. In a mature culture, the adults and the educators and the industrialists and the politicians and the bankers would all recognize that as their solemn privilege. And there'd be probably a lot more music and dancing scattered throughout the culture and maybe a 2-hour work day. Right, unless you liked to work, in which case, you know.
Yeah, the Greeks and retire at 52 and live to 100.
Yeah, there you go.
Live to 100.
Oh, the Greeks.
Yeah,
I think they live a long life. Yeah, they have the lowest suicide rate in the world.
Wow, I like to retire at 52.
Field trip.
And they drink enough. God knows it's not about the alcohol.
Yeah. But it's not that important to get distracted by, you know, how a global culture might change were it to wake up to its own primacy. I mean, science fiction's been written and more will be written, you know, around that topic and others, right? Yeah. No, it's the real, let's say, privilege of your own firsthand experience is happens to be your own first-hand experience. And that's what's always present. We're incredibly restless and, you know, libidinal. Right. We like to tango and create all kinds of, you know, drama. But what is it that we're, you know, looking for? What do we hope to find, gain, or occur in our lives if it all goes my way? Right? Let's say everything is going your way. And what does that look like? I mean, do you have enough leisure and enough money to go on one retreat after another, and then see your therapist, you know, in between each retreat so you can download?
Don't forget the massage treatment.
Yeah, well, those are included.
Shopping
trips.
Right. So. Yeah, you can fill up the whole life with that shit.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, I would think after a while that'd get a little stale, too.
Everything you know, gets when stale. There's not a thing that doesn't get stale.
That's
stale Cheetos are the bomb. But
yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's no point in chewing them. You just have to gum them. Yeah.
That's how they created the ones that are all squished up and much crunchier, right? It's just a stale.
Yeah, there were stale ones, yeah.
And they started to sell them.
That's right. Gave them a different name. It's like you hear people, you know, let's say come to a, you know, the word satsang, right? They come to a satsang, whatever that is, and people will start reporting on shit that's going on in their lives in terms of how these teachings are infecting them or not affecting them or what they care about or don't care about. And invariably, you see the same kind of curious seduction happen over and over again, which is I'm voluntarily participating in a journey, a mystery school of, you know, transcendent discovery. But I continue to report on it through the context of my life. And it's like, no, that, no, no. Your life is apparitional. And it's appearing meticulously and marvelously within your transcendent nature. That's an interesting, right, discovery to taste or touch or get accustomed to. Because as that shifts, as your loyalty shifts from, oh, my spiritual shit is going fairly well in my life, to my apparitional life doesn't interest me at all anymore because I've discovered that that I'm made of nourishment.
The thing is, there may not be a lot to talk about in that context or that lack of content.
Yeah, right, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's part of the challenge.
Yeah, that's part of what,
that's the,
part of the adventure.
It is.
Yeah. Right.
This is probably what good poetry is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Theater and poetry and you name it. Yeah. Because when you look at the models, let's say you've hung out with, you know, Nomi or some famous guru somewhere, or Adyashanti, shit, he people realize in the community of Adyashanti's students, and then he goes ahead and gives them, you know, license to teach. And they make a big deal about telling everyone that I was invited to teach by Adyashanti as if that's, you know, some kind of a moniker. You know, more or less they're saying, ha, you're still an idiot fucking seeker. I'm fucking enlightened. Adyashanti said so. Now I'm going to teach. And, you know, you might want to come. You know, if you're lucky, you can come now to my fucking satsangs. What the fuck is that?
Well, there's a long tradition of that, right?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is. There is.
Everybody needs to start from scratch.
It's like a weird, you know, chain of celebrity apprentices, you know, or celebrity enlightened folks. You're like, that's what the fuck, that's what this does? That's the best we can do? Something's wrong with the model. Something's broken.
It's getting to be that's the culture now.
Yeah.
Amazing how that's happening.
Something's wrong with the model. Something's broken. And we borrowed this, you know, horrific way of being together. This, you know, teacher-student thing with, you know, the, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, you had an ecstatic experience. Now, you know, we'll certify you in our thing. What does Samuel Bonder do? It's multi-level marketing enlightenment.
Yeah,
it's a pyramid scheme.
Pyramid. She was in Beyond Shame the other day talking about how you tell somebody's enlightened. One was by the behavior, but another one was how much you can tell, like, from the body, like, that there's this flow of emptiness.
There's a what?
Flow of emptiness or something like that. Wow. I can't remember. I was here when I remember.
That sounds good.
Kind of glasses.
I don't know. But, like you said, told a story about how he felt like he was a homeless guy. His eye looked like it had his ego sort of, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Good luck.
Cool. You need the third eye to do that.
There's a, you know, there's that risk of specialization that occurs, right? When you're stuck in the mindset of the celebrity enlightened personality who has a palpable emptiness thing going on, or smells a certain way, you know, hopefully Cheetos, like Cheetos, or amasses, you know, large numbers of followers and money, or CDs, DVDs, you know, and then creates some fancy mnemonic device about their, you know, their shtick. This is the best we could do. Even in the very rich culture of one's own, you know, discovery, autonomous discovery, the best we can do is come up with all of these symptoms of fetishizing enlightenment, enlightened persons, the passing of the baton, right? To create just more and more circles of psychophants and you know, siphoning, which is just strange.
It's not strange at all, because if you look at what the motivation of the average person, and myself included,
uh-huh,
in this path of, you know, seeking and stumbling across the concept of enlightenment,
yeah,
it's all about get me out of my friggin' pain. And if you've got, you know, lots of people that are looking to get themselves out of pain, of course they're going to, you know, end up in kind of interesting spots.
Yeah.
Who says that spiritual pursuits aren't prostituted to the, you know, the desire of just people that want to get out of pain?
Yep.
And they don't, they're not pure, and neither are the people that are seeking it.
It could be their obsessive thinking about
really
whatever they're hung up on, whatever they're stuck on.
Yeah, it's no different than chasing money or prestige or celebrity. It's no different than any of those other human pursuits.
Yes.
In the hands of a majority of the people, myself included.
Okay.
I mean, I was like, sign me the F up when I had a taste of a couple things and realized this might give me something. I'm like, oh, count me in.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go all Bruce Jenner on this.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
I don't know. Diane Sawyer is going to do the interview. We'll find out.
That'll be a good one.
That'll be like watching O.J. Simpson drive down the 405.
But there has to be something more than just that. There is an essence of like, man, I have had a taste of something and I want more. And it's not just get me out of my pain.
Okay.
It's a lot more than that. Because if it was just get me out of my pain after hanging out here for a while, I would have been gone. Because the pain was not getting better. It was getting worse.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, the curious thing about you know, let's say a transcendent ingress into the nature of present experience, it's not all that concerned with just how much pain you're in.
Well, you know, that's so interesting, because it's like, I think at first it is exactly that. It's like, get me out of this pain and give me some bliss, you know.
Yeah.
And then later on, I don't know whose words, it seems as though maybe it dawns on you that that's not just going to be given to you. What happens is, in the very process, is what
causes it.
That allows that to happen.
Yes.
So that very being with that, given up whatever the hang-ups are, just for a greater cause or whatever, seems to be what it is, you know, what works. Or
and how it's sold, too, is that, like, you have to believe somebody's gotten there, otherwise you wouldn't go there. Or not that you're going anywhere, but...
Well, it's ingrained in us, you know, like for, you know, growing up, you know, Jesus and Bible stories and all that.
Yeah, but they don't advertise you can be like Jesus. They don't advertise you're going to get there.
You're not allowed to be.
No. Yeah, you get thrown out.
Well, but just to get to know Jesus would be a big deal, you know. Like, I remember, I mean, I was involved with, you know, the church groups and stuff like that, and on retreats and stuff like that. I wasn't all that gung-ho, but, I mean, I was like, give me something here, you know. And I don't know if I ever would say that I got an answer. But I think that was maybe the start of this this openness towards something.
I think the human heart's just always kind of looking. And most people that, you know, like you were saying, you can drug it away or you can, you know, deny it away. But I don't think your normal human heart isn't anything more than just, like, looking for something. We're all looking. We know that there is more to this existence than just this little sniveling, vulnerable, get me out of my pain existence.
We all know Cheeto, gobbling, complaining, pain body.
Looking for love.
Looking for love.
Yeah.
And watching TV.
It takes good, let's say, some good fortune, right? Karmic dice. The roll of the karmic dice. To, for the geometry of your own attention to shift. Because the conditioned geometry of your attention is as creature.
Yeah.
That's the primary loyalty of samsara, is that your attention, the gift of your attention, the miracle of attention presumes creature. And because everything is evaporative in a kind of majestic way, this creature orientation kind of hits a wall. And the things that we do to ameliorate the disappointment with creaturehood most often simply reinforce the myth of creaturehood. And we get enrolled in psychological time. We become enrolled in becoming or mitigation, amelioration, replacing the pain of creaturehood with the joy of creaturehood. But even the joy of creaturehood is so temporary, right? That whatever joys you do come by, and there are many, they don't release you from the myth of creaturehood. So then you become condemned to being a nonstop consumer of ameliorations. Fuck, that's tiring. And it doesn't work, and it's not very satisfying.
And it can be very expensive.
And it for sure is expensive. That's right. Yeah. Now you wonder why some of these, you know, celebrated religious institutions encourage all of these superficial practices and approaches when they know better.
Mm. How could they know better?
Yeah, man, it's gonna break you first.
Huh?
That's going to beat you down. It's going to break you first. It's like one last good failure, you know?
Yeah, one last good failure is what this is about.
A really great purpose. You know, they're all dead in the streets.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it seems somewhat circuitous, right? It's like, okay, so what's the real nature of, you know, the geometry of suffering and association or misappropriation of consciousness? And if we can play around with and articulate a keen observation, humorous observation of the genesis of creaturehood, then by diagnosing more succinctly, it might appeal to us to respond, right, to the glorious blasphemy of samsara in a different way, in a more, can we say, direct manner. That's the challenge. That's part of the adventure. You know, on the sine wave of our lives, when we're young and loaded with more hormones than we know what to do with, right? There's going to be what there's going to be in terms of navigating relationships and education and career and maybe starting a family or experimentation of a million kinds. And you know, we're not placing any demand on anyone, regardless of how old or mature they are. But you can appreciate that when the time comes organically and naturally to respond to the mystery of yourself, then, you know, kind of a succinct appreciation for recognizing the profound involuntary proliferation of creaturehood is really what's at the root of all of this disquietude. And the willingness, the confidence to lean into it and suggest, however heretical it may be, that your present experience is not bound by the myth of creaturehood. That you are really operating in a completely mysterious transcendent scale without measure. And if that's introduced as a possibility, as a way to rally your discovery adventure around, then it might shift what kind of commitments you make, right, to unwind from the disquietude of creature. I mean, you might end up joining a kazoo band instead of taking vows and make more progress, right? It is for sure, you know, a radical position to suggest that what you call your life is only apparitionally appearing in your unbounded, transcendent, and opulent openness. And that a shift in loyalty from trying to get your creaturehood to go your way to discovering what it might feel like to rest in what you really are. Who knows what that might deliver? Who knows what it could reveal to us?
I'm just constantly struck by the demands of the mentation, you know, mentality, just constantly thinking about things, trying to solve those riddles or figure out where I'm going, what I'm doing, and what my priorities are.
Yep. Right.
Just continuously identifying with that whole.
Yes. Yes. Right.
No doubt, really. Except for sometimes.
Yeah.
And then you know, and that's why I like this course, you know, so much, because, you know, there is a little bit of that let up, or at least the recognition that I tend to fall into that so often, you know. And it's not very satisfying, you know.
No, fantasy, a life full of fantasy and association from the vantage point of as being a creature, prioritizing that which you have no control over anyway, really can get you down. You can like be like, I have no idea why I spend this much time, the vitality of my consciousness, ruminating over imaginary shit that I can't control anyway. Fuck me. That's nuts.
It's sometimes it's actually kind of funny. I mean, I remember from the days long ago, Despair Comics. My favorite Despair Comics cover was this guy sitting in an overstuffed chair and the wife saying, well, what do you want to watch on TV, George, or something? And he's like, why bother? And that cracked me up. I'm sorry. That was the most ridiculous, most despairing thing ever. It absolutely cracked me up because it was so revealing.
George got to his bottom and you were enjoying it vicariously.
What comic was it?
Despair. That was, what's his name? Navarro Crumb.
Oh, okay.
It was just wonderful, crazy character.
That's
and I probably got that cover all wrong, stating incorrect, I'm sure, but that's kind of
the shamanic element in a you could say a transmutative quality of attention. So we start wherever the fuck you are, which happens to be here, whenever that is. Like, now is here, and now. It doesn't really say much about it, but okay. And what's the predominant interface that you're having with the gurgling, energetic, vibratory, right, aliveness of your own present experience? What's the primary interface? Is it anecdotal association, right? An anecdotal association as thinking is a way that the miracle of you can occupy itself or entertain itself in pretty much effortless, you know, fantasy. And I'm not using the word fantasy in a, you know, disparaging manner. But you can also, I'm sure there's a lot more bandwidth than we can even have words for, but you can also occupy your present gurgling nature as pure texture, without reference, without anecdotal association.
Seems like that's the only way, you know? I mean, else you're just stuck in the drama.
That's probably true. Yeah, that's this is the shamanic element of the yoga. Is okay. Here the fuck this is, and how do I respond? How do I relax? How do I entrain? How do I occupy the miracle of my present experience? And we don't have to call it a miracle. That might be a little too evangelical. How do I occupy the shitstorm of my present experience? Shitbox might be good. Here's the current shitbox that I'm in. And if I don't imagine anything, really, what's there for me to convince myself of? That's it.
By the same token, it's so tricky that this decision that one may make just wraps it right back into some other process, you know.
This is a bear greased kayak on Class 6 Rapids. Yeah. I mean that's how fiercely, humorously, and exasperatingly this imagines. Yeah. Right. So it is a really curious, you know, call it a discipline or way of looking. So that here's the same reality that you've always known, whatever that suggests, and our typical way of responding to the reality I've always known is through anecdotal association, going down these rapids, thinking I've actually got a paddle when I have none. I'm dipping my paddle in the water, but I don't really have a paddle. People on the shore are going, dude, are you okay? You're like, I'm good. And you're going like this. And they're like, that fucking guy doesn't have a paddle. But you don't know that. They can see it, but you can't. You're staring. So what does, what does enlightenment suggest? I mean, Jesus Christ, it's like we're kind of fucking drowning in enlightened personas. They're like, you know, coming out of the woodwork, perhaps more in Marin than in Doylestown, but okay. There's the internet, so, you know, you can fucking stalk enlightened persons pretty much 24/7, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, which is weird. I mean, when Autobiography of a Yogi was written, okay, that was like the only fucking thing in town.
Yeah.
You know, now you can fucking stalk enlightened people 24/7.
Well, you gotta like get the basket and thin it out and figure out who may be genuine and who isn't. And
well, that's thrilling.
Before you have to find like one little precious book.
No, Be Here or Not came out like, whoa.
Yeah. Really.
We're just dropped from the sky.
Really. Yeah. I mean, now you can go to the goddamn barbershop and talk about this shit.
Well, they use it in advertising campaigns.
It's still. It's still a bizarre subculture, even though Oprah Winfrey interviewed Eckhart Tolle. Yeah, what?
Yeah,
I know. It's so strange.
It's really related to in different things, like the Deepak Chopra and healthy aging or something.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Abundance.
Abundance, yeah.
Or like,
right.
You know, some loving kindness.
You know, when you're not a creature, and you begin to feel yourself without measure. I mean, your abundance is a suppository. But as a creature, you know, the presumption is unabundant. The presumption is insufficient. And then hell-bent, right, on buying those Tony Robbins tapes and working that CD program to get abundant, which means turning out some other CD product to teach other people how to get abundant.
Yeah, and
it's like Tony Robbins is not actually abundant. He doesn't notice it, but it's true. Despite all the wealth and celebrity and firewalking, he's not actually abundant. He's just as shallow. And
he's abundantly like.
He's just as shallow and unhappy as he's always been. And all he did was create a program to sell you the myth of getting abundant.
He doesn't even disguise it in words like abundant anymore. You see, it's like this book, and it has money in the title, like getting your money or something like that. You're getting,
why not? Getting all you can get before you die.
Getting yours.
Yeah. Getting all you can get from others before you die by selling them a package on how they can get all they can get from others before they die. I mean, you look at the scheme of it and you're going, what have you actually added to the culture besides the myth of getting abundant, which is no abundance at all? And you're like, wow. Yeah. The suggestion is that it's possible, plausible, dare I say at hand, that you can occupy your present experience without being pushed around by anecdotal misery, by fantasy. And that's not an event. It's a way of life.
But is it really anything that... It's not a choice, I wouldn't say.
Choice is not important, really. It's that it's possible.
Just that it's possible.
That it's possible, plausible, and at hand is enough.
Mm-hmm. Just the recognition of that.
Yes.
I mean, that's
pretty big. Yeah.
And it's not going to toast the bread or walk the dog,
but what's been toasting the bread and walking the dog up to this point? You think, or one thinks, I've been toasting the bread, I've been walking the dog, me as the creature, the planning, anecdotal, malnourished Tony Robbins program purchasing creature. I've been the one doing this miracle. You see, it's not true. The dog is walking herself. You just happen to be on the other end of the leash. God grows the fruit. I mean, you know, we harvest the cattle, but... So you think that one thinks that, well, no, I've applied myself. I've had my share of hard knocks and disappointments and suffering and, you know, crazy mind and medication and interventions that fortunately permitted me to actually hold down a job and go on a date once in a while. Fuck me, that's working out. And we think I've done this. That I've got a steering wheel, you know. So what if it's a 98 Chevy? Still, I got a steering wheel. And I'm steering this fucker. And as much of the time as possible, I'm like praying that it goes my way. But that's not what's happening. That's never what's happened. And everything you think about how you got to like right here, everything that you think about how you may have gotten to right here is not true. And I'm not talking 99.9% of it. All of it. Nothing is true other than right here. Nothing. Nothing at all other than right here is true. And curiously, you can't even extract any truth from right here. You're SOL when it comes to truth. That's the texture of you as a non-associative, transcendent void. Nothing prior to this moment is or was true, and you cannot extract any true from here.
Is it your quest? You're beyond questioning at that point? I mean, because I see that as, I mean, I don't, that's like a step too far, it seems.
Yay. Good. It's good to know, you know, how far you'll go.
It's like,
right? How low do you want to drop the limbo bar? Yeah. Okay.
There's
yes.
Void, and I'm like,
yeah, that's exactly. Yes. That seems like a step too far. I hear you. Absolutely, it is.
Because, you know, I mean, obviously, it's my habit. It's a habit. It's a human habit, I could say.
Right.
To figure it out. Figure out the causal relationship. Or at least admit that there is a causal relationship.
Yeah, but look, but see, I appreciate the seduction and the scientific method and the poetry of doing that, right? I hear you. But to be so seduced, you have to invest in your present experience as the result of something. You see, you have to commit yourself to a curious causative nature of expression.
What if you don't include yourself in that? What if you extract yourself? You say, well, this is just this phenomena that happens. I'm not even part of it, but this is what is going on. Sun shines, there's sunburn. You know?
Attachments, like, so if it's hard to imagine whatever you guys were talking about.
We don't know.
Like, we have no choice. So we don't have any choice about how low we can go.
Oh. Well, again, you know, choice is kind of a befuddling. Choice is like a Pac-Man, you know, running around gobbling little things up. Choice is not on the table.
So,
because volition is, you know, truly imaginary. Therefore, the presence or absence of choice is somewhat randomized. It's not really important to the question at hand. Because here you are. Here's your irrefutability. Whenever and wherever you are is the presence of your irrefutability. Choice is not that important to you any longer. Choice is a myth. Completely a myth. The presence of choice, the absence of choice, is just a myth.
No matter how many associative attachments you have.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, they all come with. I mean, you know, as soon as you got one thing, you got everything else, right?
You notice it. Yes, that's right. You dip your toe in this water.
Well, it's a fixational element of
yes.
Association.
Okay. Yes. Sure. I mean, that's, you know, every nuance, as you look into the nature of fixation, pattern recognition, and the presumption of a life, in your experience, you can't really do it on anyone else's behalf. You know, it's like, do it for yourself. You can, I mean, that's where it's vital, right? So you look at the nature of fixation and pattern recognition, or a step that's gone just too far. Like, that was cool, up to the point you said that shit. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that appears in your experience. It's a kind of delightful observation and reflex which appears in your experience. So you can play with it.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
so if you hit your edge, though.
Well, then you get the glowing at the edge. It's like a black hole. I mean, you know.
Well, that's what we're playing with.
Let's look at this, you know.
Yes.
You go up to it, and all of a sudden you're going, it's like, whoa!
This is what we're playing with. We're playing with peering into or hanging out with a profoundly activized consciousness which dreams. Yeah? And the dreaming is everything that appears in your experience that anthropomorphizes the weirditude of your present experience and then starts assigning, you know, meanings or creating various kinds of you know, mythic archetypes like choice.
Well, I mean, I guess, like with the Buddha story, I mean, he really didn't have any attachments from the get-go. It took him 5 years.
You're comparing.
True story.
True story, yeah. I know. Yeah, well, once you talk about the Buddha, we, you know, you're right. True story.
Yeah. Just saying.
Just saying. I know.
So are you saying that we're something less than...
No, I don't know. I'm just some odd... I don't know, the mind thing where it's like.
Well, this is just it. See,
I
here.
Away, back, huh?
Your presence has no story. It just doesn't. Yet, an infinitude of curious association, the plethora of, right, story appears involuntarily, spontaneously, with a tremendous emphasis of belief and superstition and certainty, surety, causality, time, space, right? Choice, will, all of these things. And this entire bandwidth of hallucination appears absolutely spontaneously. And you assign to it, or you become loyal to it, in the moment. See, this is strange now because, fuck, you think that you are the product of these associations ever since, let's say, you were born or started thinking or making shit up, or let's say when you were conceived.
Well, we sense a pattern in that question.
What we don't see is that if you become loyal to hysteria, you do it right here. There was not a you prior to this moment that was the product of anything. So if you become loyal to anecdotal hysteria, disassociative consciousness through association, right? You become dissociative through association. You're doing it right now. It's not like it has any inertia. It has no dibs on you. It doesn't. It doesn't have any influence over you from the past.
Seems
so
like
you're saying there is no
doesn't
continuity.
It? No.
There's no continuity.
There is no continuity.
That's a mess. Isn't there like some sort of training them? Like, you know, somebody trains the box and then somebody throws a punch on them, they're going to automatically like react.
Yes. So sure.
Like you're going to just keep automatically... associating.
Yep. Yes.
I mean, yeah, it still is all, you know, happening now, but you said there's no inertia. It seems like there is, like, at least, you know.
But yes, but how do you find that inertia here? You only imagine it so, right? By reflecting on what you consider your experience of the past, right? And this is reasonable. I'm not suggesting it's unreasonable. But it conjures a present sense of association.
Inertia relating to inertia.
Yes. Absolutely. So what I'm suggesting, and I hesitate because it's another one of those, now you've gone way too far. It really is.
Throw us in there.
Because you see, your response, of course, is a very reasonable response. You look at your own mind, your own history, your own dreaming, your own, the imagination of your own life, and you see how good you have become at creating, you know, association with pattern recognition. You see how good you are at dissociation through association.
I don't have to try. Yeah,
right? You're a fucking miracle. Yeah. It's that good. But what's fun is that when you appreciate how good you are at instantaneously like as in the present moment, conjuring an idea that this has been going on for some time. You can also get, I trust, I hope, a slight taste that that's not really true. That this has not been going on for some time.
Heretic!
I know, it's too weird.
String them up.
It's too strange. And you see that, then you think that, you know, your chances at, call it freedom, whatever the fuck that might suggest, are not good. Why? Because you're so good at dissociative relationship with the miracle of your present experience. And this is going to sound funny, but I'm here to tell you, like any good snake oil salesman would, is that that's not true. Even in the midst of your miraculous superpowers of dissociative experience through pattern recognition and association, it's not true. It doesn't actually impose upon you.
I mean, just that statement of dissociative experience through pattern recognition or association.
Yes.
That reverses the whole dynamic. Right there.
It can.
Because my initial idea of dissociation is it's going the other way, you know.
Right.
I think of dissociation from the association.
Right.
And you're going the other way.
Yes.
It's kind of the same thing if you,
I think I need a diagram or something.
It's where you take yourself to be.
If you assign yourself to be the product of association, pattern recognition, memory, will, choice, walk the dog, butter the bread, right? If you do so, and you're welcome to do so, far be it for me to suggest you should do anything other than that. But if you're doing it, you're doing it now.
It's cool, huh?
Yeah. By beginning to play with that, well, fuck, this could very well be absolutely liberated and unobscured. Whoa. It could possibly be that. And yet, because it dreams as well as it dreams, I think that I'm on the receiving end, right? Or subject to a victim of the dreaming. And therefore, I think I've got a lot of meditation and a lot of recovery and a lot of therapy and a lot of mushrooms to take between here and my enlightenment. Right? Why is that? Because you've accused yourself of being the product of something that's been around a long time. Uh-huh. And now you have to unwind it again for a long time before you discover that you are absolutely unafflicted.
It's like Dorothy.
Yes. But what if that's not true? That you are just as you are, just as this is, like right about now, and curiously, right about here, this is not the product of affliction. And you need not self-assign. You need not self-accuse. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying your mind comes to a screaming halt. It can. It has. Right? Everyone's had the experience in this room or elsewhere, perhaps all 7 billion, of your mind spontaneously coming to a screaming halt. I didn't know what to do about it. Where did I go? What the fuck? Who am I? Yeah. And that's this. Just because you're shining doesn't mean you have to be an idiot. It turns out you could be shining and you tell no story about it. You see, you really, really are free of any assignment.
Dead men tell no tales.
And look at the reflex of first assigning shit to yourself so that then you can line up in the enlightenment queue. You assign, then you place yourself in the queue. But if you don't assign, you can leave the line. Now, I mean, here. I mean, now, just as...
Well, we create that fantasy, right? I mean, we just create that. It's like, okay, it's going to take 50 years, or 50 lifetimes.
Yes, we do. Or let's say, or yes, this does. You know, who's doing it or what's doing it is not really that important. You're not going to get a lot of mileage out of going third person or first person. Who gives a fuck? So if there's no assignment... Yeah, really. If there's no assignment, if you're not convincing yourself of anything, inertia or anything, ta-da, get used to it. Feel what it feels like to be whatever you are or aren't without assignment. That's the transmission, not from here to there. That's bullshit. Transmission is, you could say, this occurring to itself without assignment. And your loyalty shifts. Because as you become acquainted with feeling yourself without assignment, it might turn out that you become fond of it, that it has an interest in you. You're like, you know what? I might want to go on a date with myself and be absolutely nothing. And this is how, right, your affection for yourself becomes more conscious. You're like, whoa. I'm not sure what this is. It's okay with me if it doesn't last, even. But even if it's a little, you know, 10-second escapade, maybe a 30-second date. It's a quick date. You know those quick dates. Hi, I'm Jeff. You know, next. I'm Jewish. Next.
Yeah,
right. Right. I want to have children. Next. But wait, I kind of liked you. Next. Can I get your number? Sorry, too late. Goodbye. We'll never meet again. Right. So you go on a 10-second date with yourself to nowhere. You don't assign. You don't convince yourself of anything. You're not looking for a deliverable. You get off the queue. Here you are. Bodhi fucking Cheetah. Bright mind. Not compassion. That's for fucking Buddhists. Losers. Buddhist losers.
No judgment, right?
Compassion is what people that can't meditate do. You know? Yeah. If you can't sit on a cushion, then you try to spread compassion. If you're smart, you stay on the cushion. Right? Bodhicitta is bright mind. Bodhicitta is you on a date with yourself without any assignment. And this shit will sneak up on you. Mm. To entertain that anything you convince yourself of is arbitrary, occurs presently, and untrue. It takes the wind out of the sails of, oh, I'm the consequence of things, and I have miles to go before I can have my Bodhi tree experience. You see? Your present experience is not the consequence of anything. It's not the culmination of what you call your life. It's the unafflicted miracle of being that is absolutely untethered by circumstance, event, and all phenomenality.
Isn't it generally that it's...
It is.
There's something mistaken. I mean, so what you're doing is you're exposing the mistake, it seems to me.
Okay.
You know, between what you are. You know, I mean, we misidentify.
Or yes.
Or you could just say if we identify.
The whole culture is malevolently interested in misidentification and control and conformity.
Aren't they just a bunch of zip players anyway?
Everyone's only got a walk on.
Yeah, 15 seconds.
To get a feel for yourself as unafflicted and unafflictable, and not as the result of a good meditation or a tofurkey burrito, is quite something. And this revelation, which you're for sure entitled to, since it is you, can, you know, open a curious doorway or door in the floor and sneak up on you. And you become acquainted with your present experience, absolutely free from the bane of becoming. Even the most sincere scientist or poet or discoverer cannot get to the bottom of this being a causal. From a therapeutic point of view, dipping in the water of your a causal, immeasurable nature curiously has a lot more potency in organizing the shit box of your life than the finest of therapies. And that doesn't suggest you should stop seeing your therapist. But this being a causal and immeasurable and absolutely transcendent of the myth of creaturehood, as you feel it, it's it's fucking magic. It can really, it can, well, you can time travel with it. Again, not as if you have a destination. You can time travel in that it cares for everything. It always has. It's very inventive. It's subtly expressive. Fascinating. Your present nature, unafflicted by associative hysteria, is remarkably dynamic. But just not in, you know, human meme, right? It's dynamic of a different order of magnitude, a different kind of vocabulary. But you're that intelligent. You're fully capable of feeling, seeing, swimming in this remarkable, subtle vocabulary of radiant expression. With no assignment, no causality, no explanation, no appointment, no destination. I mean, if there's a Cheeto, reach for one. It's that simple, you know. Just because you're enlightened doesn't mean you can't have a Cheeto.
That's all I needed to hear.
He's taking the bag.
Does that make you a cheater?
Something about reaching in a bag.
Oh. I don't know.
Relatively low carbohydrate, too.
No.
They're all like,
is it by weight, maybe?
About 15 grams, but that's still less than your average.
Or how many? One?
I just feel like lazy with assessments of these things.
So maybe I'm the, for a time, I'm the designated driver. Right? You may not be insane enough yet to feel like you can confidently articulate some of this gibberish, right, for more than maybe a minute or two, right? So, okay, so I'm crazy enough that I can pretend to articulate this gibberish for a couple hours, right? All right, so I'm the designated driver. Big fucking deal.
You come up with bear grease coated kayaks. I mean, what the? Where do you get this shit?
I don't know.
Well,
look at
Sunshine Bar.
Oh my God.
That's talent. It's a distinct talent.
Just what do you think of? That's what you think the examples are like all tapped out. He comes up with something else. You're entertaining as shit, Jeff. We love it.
I like Ascension Noir. I can feel it coming on, you know. I'm sitting there trying to get a good night's sleep.
But I tell you what.
And all of a sudden, these fucking creatures show up, and I'm like, oh.
It's not for light reading, though. Man, that's...
Right.
I mean, you know.
Okay.
Kind of dense. No. It's like, woo.
I know. Right.
I was reading some of this stuff from your... Facebook page the other night, and I'm telling you, like, your voice was just like right there.
Mm.
I mean, there is nothing happening. There sure as fuck isn't anything happening to you. Like, whoa. I don't even think those words were there, but it like punched right through. Damn. Kicking my ass, I'm not even there.
Yeah. I don't see any risk of 20 people showing up anytime soon.
You might have to handle the masses. You better get ready. Who could be your minions?
You need to take on a spiritual name.
Yeah. Well, I have several.
Oh, please stop. Right.
Right. Swami Cheese Curl.
Swami Ken. Wasn't that Swami Ken?
Swami Ken. He was cool.
Yeah.
I like Swami Ken. Yeah, he got up in front of the room and took a nap.
Swami Ken.
Just bobbing. Is that what enlightenment is, Ken?
Oh, Lord.
Taking a dip?
That is sort of a delicious kind of thing when you're falling into that.
I know. It's the best.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
It's very delicious.
Yeah.
It's even more delicious if you're not like going to bed. You're just like, yeah. You just feel like, man, I think I'm going to just go for a nap.
Yeah.
Let it happen.
Yeah.
It sort of lingers a little bit. It's nice.
That is nice.
I used to think it was torture because I used to insist that I stay awake. And now I just let it have me, and it's totally different.
Stay
half awake. Yeah. I stay awake enough that if anybody walks in my office, I'm still working.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just barely.
Do this guy. I like your look.
20 years old on the door.
Thanks for coming, everyone.
Mm.